if you're not clear on who you are and how you want to be perceived, then the market determines your brand for you. And so how can women be more visible and be seen? Well, first decide on how you want to be seen, what's the perception, and then start to use that, start to embed it in your conversations.
Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go.
Welcome back to Life After Corporate, my friend. And if you are new to our show, welcome home. This is where you get the straight scoop on what it really takes to make the leap from corporate leader to launching and growing, and if you want to, scaling your new business as an entrepreneur. And today we're talking about how to stop playing it safe in front of the room and stepping out and owning the room and making powerful offers. So today we're talking to Diane DiResta. She is the founder of DiResta Communications. She works with leaders to light up the room and stop playing it safe in every presentation and communication. She's a certified professional speaker, a speech pathologist, and an executive speech coach. Her LinkedIn course, Speaking Confidently and Effectively, ranked in the top 20 most popular courses for two consecutive years. Wow. Got to download that one, my friends. So we're going to talk today about how to stop playing safe and how to own the room. Welcome to Life After Corporate, Diane.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here, Diane. I know that you weren't always the founder of DiResta Communications. Tell us what you were doing before you decided to make the leap yourself and jump into the entrepreneurial pool.
Well, my first career was as a speech pathologist. I got my master's from Columbia, and I worked in the New York City schools for about 8 years. And while I liked working with the children, I did not like the Board of Education. I saw no career path, and I was getting bored. And so I made a career change. I found a job in the New York Times. It was entry-level stand-up trainer for a presentation company, which was great because it was my foray into business. There were public seminars. And then I became their senior associate and then moved on to Salomon Brothers and started doing supervisory management training, which was fun and different, very different from the small company. And then my last full-time job was assistant vice president at Drexel Burnham, another investment banking firm, where I was recruiting MBAs for the trading floor, the institutional sales and training program. We put that together. And then I realized that I liked what I was doing. I liked the pace. I liked the money. I did not like the culture of Wall Street. I didn't know then what I know now, which is many times people are not a fit in a company, not because of skill set, but because a mismatch of culture. So that's what that was. So I left there and started going out on my own. So here's the career path. You don't want to follow my career path. I was in the job, the first job, Board of Education, a year and a half. There were massive New York City layoffs, first time in history. Second thing, I went to Salomon Brothers a year later, the market crash. Again, I was out on my butt. The third time, we know what happened with Drexel Burnham, but I was exiting anyway. So I realized that I had to do something. So what I started doing was freelancing. There used to be a training company that would sell to Salomon Brothers. So I contacted that salesperson. I said, can you tell me about it? Can I get in? I'd like to do training. So that's how I got in, through a contact. And I started doing programs. Now, just to give you an idea, I was getting 3 days a week of training a month, and they were paying $300 a day. So I was grossing $900 a month when I first started. But at least I was getting my foot in the door. Then my break happened. Somebody at CLAN Services needed a training manager for 6 months. And so I said, I'll do it as long as I can get my 3 days a month free. And he said, yes. So I kept my other thing 3 days a month, and I started doing the training manager job. And that gave me some consistent income, which was great. When that ended, they hired me back as a consultant. So that became my first corporate client. So that's how it happened. I didn't plan Although I had in the back of my mind earlier, wow, I'd love to work for myself someday, but I had no idea what I was doing, did not have any real training. I just jumped in and did it. And I remember telling my husband when I was freelancing, "Now I like this. This suits my personality, but I wasn't going to do it." And he said, "Why?" I said, "Well, I don't have enough experience." He said, "You have enough experience." "Well, I don't really know enough." "You know enough." And so I did it. So
Thank God he was there cheering you on. Yeah. So what's coming up in my mind as I'm listening to you is scrappy resilience, that you really early on had to become resilient. And, you know, what I call scrappy is you find the opportunities that are available to you. And it's no surprise that Wall Street wasn't aligned with your cultural values. I mean, Wall Street is a difficult place for most women to exist or succeed for any period of time. But unlike some of our listeners, you never had the golden handcuffs. So it wasn't
no.
a situation where, yeah, no golden handcuffs. So it's not like you had the big paycheck and the stock options and the bonuses and all that stuff that was keeping you. So in many ways, your career is by design, which is a beautiful thing. And so glad that you found your value, your purpose, and are helping others through the coaching and consulting that you do.
Yeah. And I came to the conclusion that my life's purpose is to empower people through the spoken word. That's really what I do in all different kinds of situations. So I do think I'm on purpose.
You are on purpose. And if there is one thing that you have to do when you make the leap and you decide to start your own business, is you need to be seen and heard. So understanding how to read the room, how to present in front of the room, how to own the room is a key skill. So what are some of the, I know you work with both men and women. Mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest challenges that you see both men and women, and maybe even women specifically, get caught up in as they try to learn these new skills? And it makes sense, right? So if you've come from the corporate world and speaking wasn't part of your day-to-day, you've never been here before. And there's so many new things that happen with entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And one of them that feels very uncomfortable is speaking. So how do you, what are some of the things that trip people up and how do you help them?
Well, a couple of things. There are two main reasons why people will contact me. And number one is confidence. And it's true for men and women. Although in a corporate world, I will say men tend to appear more confident. They'll just jump in. And we know the stories about resumes. If they have 50% of the skills, they'll put their resume in. A woman has to have 90% or she doesn't even try. So that's there. But when it comes to public speaking, I always say there are two equalizers in life: money and public speaking, because there really isn't a difference in that men are equally nervous as women. So number one is the confidence. Number two is clarity. That means that people struggle to put their thoughts together. They just don't know how to organize. They don't know how to get to the point. They don't know how to pitch things in a way that is listener-centered or sales-oriented. So I help them with all of that. And I would say those are the two main things. So how do you learn how to do that? It takes time, but I first start with mindset, because even if you have good skills, if you don't have the confidence or the mindset, you're going to sabotage yourself as you go along. So people who have no experience presenting themselves need to up the ante. But I would say we're always presenting ourselves. We may not be aware of it, but at a corporate job, you're presenting yourself. And the people who do it well are the ones who become more visible, who get the promotions, who get the job offers. So it's really a key skill. So how do people learn it? Well, part of it
Well, let me ask you a question before we go into how people learn it. What are some of the ways that people sabotage themselves? I'm just really curious as to, you know, if you're not comfortable speaking, you don't know what to say, how does the saboteur take hold?
Well, one of the biggest saboteurs is avoidance. People just don't do it. They look for every excuse in the book. I was once doing a training in a large company, and a man was signed up to do it. He was a manager, and he delegated it to his direct report and got away with it. So the avoidance is big, is a big saboteur. Perfectionism is another saboteur, and that's even more critical with women. you know, men will jump in sometimes and try something. Women, you know, if it's not perfect, they won't do it.
That all the time.
Yeah. And it's something that can hold you back because you're constantly perfecting, your nose is to the grindstone, and you're not out there being visible. You're not out there networking and being seen and heard because you're perfecting the one thing that you have to do. So I would say those are big saboteurs. You're not believing in yourself.
Yeah, avoiding.
I'd say avoiding, perfectionism are big saboteurs when it comes to any kind of communication. You know, it's the fear factor.
And our listeners out there, you're self-identifying already, right? So sometimes you might avoid, and then when you have to do it, you get caught up in perfectionism and, you know, done is better than perfect, right? 80% is better. So you talk about mindset as being more important than skill set. And people avoid public speaking because they feel like they don't have the skill.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about how mindset helps you overcome the feelings of deficit in skill set.
All right. And also, let me define public speaking, because there are people right now thinking, I'm not a public speaker. I'm not on a stage. Everything is public speaking. If you leave a voicemail, that is public speaking. And before I answer your question, it reminded me of a client I had. His boss had asked me to work on his communication, which I did. And he said, oh, by the way, can you work on his voicemails? I said, what do you mean? Well, he leaves me these messages a minute, 2 minutes, and I have to keep fast forwarding. So again, that's your presence. That's your reputation. And so it needs to be every situation where you're thinking about how you're coming across and presenting yourself. So tell me again the question.
Yeah. So the question is, you know, most people avoid speaking or they try to get it perfect because they feel it's all about skill set. But here you're posing that it's really mindset. So how does mindset supersede skill set? And how do we take advantage of mindset to get the skills we need in all of these? And I'm so glad you highlighted all these different public speaking scenarios, because now we're in this age of social media and everything is video, or even long form content is still a form of public speaking. You're just speaking through content or text instead of voice. So how do you get there?
The reason I say mindset trumps skill set is because, first of all, you know how to speak. You're speaking every day and you're having conversations, but most people don't have the confidence to stand up and talk from their knowledge base or their experience, because they have all of these messages operating in their software saying, it's not good enough, you don't know enough. And so the first thing I do when I work with people is we don't start with the skills, we start with mind. And we look at what are the limiting beliefs that could get in the way. And I can tell you a story of a CFO that I worked with. It was a biotech company, and he was not confident at executive meetings. And that was because he felt he didn't know enough about the science. So I said, well, could you explain the science of what your company does? Oh, yes. Well, could you explain what a biomarker is? Yes. I said, you know enough about the science. It's the scientist's job to explain the science. Your job is to tell the story of the numbers. And he started to think, and he said, yeah, I guess I do know enough. So what I've discovered, Deb, is that we tell ourselves these stories that are not really based in reality, and then we act them out. So once he started to realize that he did know enough, that changed how he thought. And then the next step is we create a reframe, a mantra, a way of saying something and thinking something differently. So that's more empowering. So for example, let's say someone says, oh, I'm terrible at public speaking. I'm just not a good public speaker. I hate this. Instead of doing that, because that's going to perpetuate the fear, what you do is you say something like, I'm learning to be a good public speaker. That's not a lie. Your brain can accept that. Because let's say you're not very good right now and you say, I'm a great speaker. It's a disconnect. So it's not going to work. So the first thing is the awareness, the conscious awareness of, what am I believing about myself? How am I sabotaging myself? What are my fears? And getting them out in the open. And then from there, coming up with a more empowering reframe so that you're not locked into that negative thinking, which isn't really based in reality.
And it's a bridge from the past to the future you that you're creating. Because really, I don't know is a fear response.
Exactly.
And it's like being that deer in front of the headlights and this fight, flight, or freeze. The freeze is, I don't know what to say. I have no what points to make. And it happens to me frequently every time I think, oh, I should do a reel today, which is not my favorite thing to do. It's like, but I don't know what to say. But then the second thought is, yes, I do know what to say. But you can't put an affirmation band-aid on something that inherently you don't believe to be true.
Exactly.
And that's a disservice that many people fall into with the positive thinking movement, that all you have to do is think a positive thought and that shifts you. You don't. You need a bridge. Like, I'm learning to. I'm in the process of. And I think that's a very, very valuable point. Diane, let's talk about, I know it's not about what to say, but let's talk about what to say, because I think the challenge that many people have is they get up in front of a room, and if they are not prepared, so for those who are not perfectionists among us, they can just ramble and not have a structure or a destination. You know, what are some of the tips that you give to people so that not only do they have the confidence that I'm learning how to be an effective public speaker, but I also have a structure for how I read the room. So how do you read the room? And then how do you create a structure for the communication so that what you're communicating is actually received?
Yeah, that's very important. So after mindset, then we're ready for skill set. And you can be brilliant, but if you don't know how to package or get your message across or pitch in a certain way that it lands, you lose the opportunity. So I give people templates and structures. And I'll give an example. One of the things that I teach people is what I call CAR, context, action, or result, or you can call it challenge, action, and result. And so when you have that structure and it's burned in your brain, all you have to do is fill in the blanks. Here was the situation. Here was the challenge. Here's what we did about it. And as a result, now you have the transitions. It's crisp and you can do it in a very short period of time. When I have longer speaking engagements, I actually demonstrate this, because this structure is great for customer testimonials, challenges, situations, case studies. And I will ask someone to time me and I will give a real customer testimonial and they'll tell me 1 minute. Yeah, I did it in 1 minute. Yes, you can embellish and have more detail, but you can get a lot of information across in 1 minute. So I give people these tools, these structures, so that they can organize their thoughts, but be concise. Because if you're not concise and you're not crisp, it can be deadly, especially for an entrepreneur, because you don't have a lot of people's attention. So when you are pitching someone, you're going in to sell someone, when you're networking, you need to be able to get to the point, but make it interesting.
And I think making it interesting is one of the biggest challenges, because I too come from an education background. I was a teacher, so I like to teach things to people. But storytelling wasn't necessarily a skill that was developed in me when I was going through my teacher education. And I think being able to tell effective stories, that's why I think journalists sometimes are the most effective presenters and the most effective writers, because of their development of their skill set and their training of telling compelling stories that reels the reader or the listener in to the conversation. So what are some of the mindset issues and skill set issues that people need to acquire or overcome in order to be effective storytellers?
Yeah, that's the next step. And I would agree with you, with journalists and also filmmakers are really good storytellers. I once thought maybe I should study film. So the first thing is, what are your stories? Sometimes people come, I don't have any stories. And so helping them line that. Sometimes you want personal stories. Sometimes you want stories or case studies from the company. But first getting those together. And then storytelling is, it's emotional. It's got a structure. So if I'm going to borrow this from someone named Kendra Hall, this was her abbreviated version of the hero's journey storytelling. Normal, explosion, new normal. So a good story has suspense. It has an arc. So you're going along in life and then you're learning and then something blows up in your face and then you have to do something to make it better. And then you come out all better for it, for what you did. Kind of like what I was saying earlier with all of those layoffs, I guess that was my hero's journey.
Exactly.
Yeah. So having that structure and knowing it. But the other thing is the storytelling itself. You need to be able to master the pause. And if you master nothing else, master that. And I'm talking directly to entrepreneurs, directly to corporate people. When you are telling a story or when you're presenting yourself, when you don't pause, the message doesn't land. It doesn't get in. It doesn't have impact. So think about the buyer. We like to say that we bought on logic, but we all know that that's not true. We buy on emotion. Logic just helps us explain it. So how are you going to give people an experience? How are they going to feel? Well, if I say today is Monday, tomorrow will be Tuesday, and then it will be Wednesday, I did not speak too fast, but there was no stop. There was no pause. So it's like a ticker. You're looking at the ticker for your stock and it goes by fast. That's what it's like for the listener. They need to process information. One of the best openings I ever heard in a presentation was from a woman from the American Cancer Association. And this is what she said. She said, turn and look at the person on your right. Now turn and look at the person on your left. One of you will have cancer in your lifetime. Well, that went right to my gut. That was 15 years ago. Why was that so impactful? Two reasons. She put a face on it and she paused. There was a long enough pause for it to get in. If she had said, according to national statistics, 1 in 3 people will have cancer in their lifetime, you're saying, Deb, 1 in 3, that's like hard to see. I didn't know it was that high. Where are you right now? You're in your intellect. We all know if you're selling, people are not making decisions based on their intellect. It's based on emotion. So that's a key component of storytelling.
That's so fascinating. And that was such a great example too, Diane. I mean, literally, I have goosebumps. The hairs on my arm were up, not because I'm cold, but because that was such a powerful and emotional story. And so here we are. We are women entrepreneurs. We are both educating. We are telling stories. And we are making offers. And where I see people fall down in their presentations and not reap the benefits of making a compelling offer when they speak is because they have overtaught, they have overwhelmed the audience. The audience doesn't know what to do with all the information they've received. So sometimes this insecurity and this not feeling good enough can lead you to over-deliver to your audience, over-teach, over-coach, leave the audience feeling overwhelmed, and no one takes any action. So here we are. We're in this delicate balance of wanting to appear knowledgeable, wanting to speak well, convey the information in a powerful way, tell powerful stories. And now it's like, oh my God, now I've got to transition to making an offer.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're describing me. Because that's how I was. I was an educator and I thought I'm going to give them information and education. And people always like that. But you're right. That's not how you make an offer. So I learned how to do this webinar where it's storytelling and it's case studies, you know, evidence, but not statistical. And you build. And then toward the end, you are getting ready for that close. Wouldn't it be nice? Imagine if this, can you see yourself doing that? And you've built to that point, and now people are saying, yeah, I want that. All right, well, next step is 15-minute call with me. You're not going to give people a price, but you're going to invite them to a conversation, and then they're excited. And I remember the first time I succeeded with that, I said to my coach, oh my God, you're right. So yeah, the tendency is to over-inform, give too much information, overwhelm. So I always say less is more.
Yeah, less is more. And also give people time to talk, widening the gap, you know, posing, I think, thoughtful questions like, well, what happens a year from now if nothing changes? or what's at risk if you don't learn how to do this, as well as the imagine if you were able to. I think people need to understand that there's a cost to staying stuck and there's an opportunity that's being lost if we stay stuck in our own patterns. And let's face it, we are a universe full of people who are here for a very short period of time, 90% of whom are probably stuck in their past patterns and don't know how to change. So if you can become a powerful speaker, and all of my clients and all of my followers have a great desire to leave an impact in the world with their work, well, you don't get to leave an impact if, number one, you aren't seen and heard.
Right.
Number two, you can craft. So you need to overcome the mindset to be seen. Then you need to craft the conversation so that you are heard and received. And then you need to make sure you know how to transition and make powerful offers by tapping into that emotional response of your audience of imagine what would it be for you if. And it doesn't have to be this way. And some of the hacks that we've learned along the way that transition from the teaching to the offer.
And what happens if you don't do this? You know, what's the impact? What's the cost? And sometimes people don't think through. They just look at a price and a product and they haven't really thought of what's happening. So those are all important. And the other thing that we haven't really touched on in terms of being seen and heard is your brand, your personal brand. And that's another piece that I spend time on, because if you're not clear on who you are and how you want to be perceived, then the market determines your brand for you. And so how can women be more visible and be seen? Well, first decide on what it is that you want, how you want to be seen, what's the perception, and then start to use that, start to embed it in your conversations. I always remember this speaker. She was really great. Carla Harris, who was the first African-American woman to be a managing director at Morgan Stanley. And she told the story that when she was coming up through the ranks, she wasn't getting promoted. And she was wondering, why am I not getting promoted? And they'd say, well, Carla, you're not tough enough. Tough? I'm from the Bronx. What are they talking about? So from that point on, when she was in meetings, she would refer to herself as tough. Well, I was tough on them. Well, you know how I am. I'm really tough on that area. Pretty soon it was working because she would hear people say, well, you know, Carla, she's tough. So think about how you want to be perceived and then take charge of that, because it's in your power to do that. And you will be more visible and more seen and more heard.
Yeah, it's a great question to ask yourself. What do you want to be known for?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want the world to know about you? What labels do you want to have attributed to you? So this has been such a great conversation, Diane. What do people do next if they want to get in touch with you and learn more about your coaching and your practice and your training?
You can go to my website, deresta.com. That's D as in David, I, R E, S as in Sam, T as in Thomas, A.com, deresta.com. And you can also find my book, Knockout Presentations, online on Amazon or any of the online stores.
Knockout Presentations is the name of the book.
Yeah, Knockout Presentations. How to Deliver Your Message with Power, Punch, and Pizzazz. It's in its third edition. And when it first launched, it was a category bestseller on Amazon. So it's still out there.
Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with our audience today, Diane. And my friends, if you have those feelings, if you feel like your saboteur is taking over, if you get in front of the room and don't know what to say, if you're a perfectionist and try to get everything perfect before you say anything, or if you're just avoiding it altogether, don't delay. Talk to Diane. There is a cost of not being seen and heard. Someone else who is willing to get over that those mindset issues is going to usurp your stage. So claim the stage, get out in front, develop the credibility, own the room. Stop playing it safe and get out in front. Diane, thank you so much for joining Life After Corporate today.
Thank you, Deb.
That's it for now, my friends. We will see you next time. Take care.
Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.